वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Shubhadaya Krishna Prasthagutave Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamane Namaste Saraswata Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sunyavani Pashtapta Desha Tadane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaurakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Bhagavan Gita on chapter 23, verse 45. Nanu svata vimudanam pramattanam agrahe haya aho na smaryam asa gopa vakyai satam gati Nanu Sparta Vimudanam Pramattanam Grihehaya Aho Na Smarayanasa Gopavakyai Satam Gati Nanu Sparta Vimudanam Pramattanam grihehaya Aho na smarayam asa Gopavakyai satam gati Nanu, indeed, svata, about their own true benefit, vimudanam, who were bewildered, pramattanam, who were intoxicated, grihaihaya, with their household endeavors, aho, ah, na, as, smarayam asa, he reminded, gopa vakyai, by the words of the cowherds, satam, of the transcendental souls, gati, ultimate destination. Translation, indeed, infatuated as we are with our household affairs, we have deviated completely from the real aim of our life. But now, just see how the Lord, through the words of these simple cowherd boys, has reminded us of the ultimate destination of all true transcendentalists. Text 46. Otherwise, why would the Supreme Controller, whose every desire is already fulfilled and who is the master of liberation and all other transcendental benedictions, enact this pretense with us, who are always to be controlled by him? Purport, although Lord Krishna is the absolute truth, he humbly sent his cowherd boyfriends to beg fruit from the brahmanas. In doing so, he exposed the brahmanas' foolish arrogance and established the glories of his own transcendental beauty by attracting their very wives to surrender at his lotus feet. Translation, indeed, infatuated as we are with our household affairs, we have deviated completely from the real aim of our life. But now, just see how the Lord, through the words of these simple cowherd boys, has reminded us of the ultimate destination of all true transcendentalists. So these are also the words of the Brahmana householders, whose wives became attracted to Krishna so much that they were ready to disobey their husbands in spite of the fact that they were brought up very nicely and knew the duties of wives and the respectable position of their husbands. Nevertheless, they forgot all that because of their attraction for Krishna. And when they understood through the cowherd boys that Krishna and Balaram were hungry and they wanted some food, then spontaneously they offered everything to them, disobeying their husbands. This incident, of course, shows the superiority of the wives to the husbands. And here we see the husbands are lamenting their low position. So here, one of the reasons they give for their ignorance is that they are householders. And because they are householders, they are very attached to everything in their house, and they become bewildered about the real goal of life, who is actually Krishna. So in this way, they are condemning household life. Which, of course, people can take in either a positive way or a negative way. In the early days of ISKCON, of course, there were not many householders, so therefore everybody was criticizing householders when anyone got married. But nowadays we see that almost all of the people are married. In the temples, there's very few brahmacharis. Therefore that type of criticism isn't there. Of course, we'll see on the other hand that all the people in Vrindavan also are married. The gopas and the gopis are all married also. Everybody is married there. There's very few brahmacharis there also, except we could say the cowherd boys are not really brahmacharis, but they're unmarried. Everybody else seems to be married there also. So it is not just that becoming a householder one becomes bewildered. One can become bewildered in any circumstance, whether one is a brahmachari, a householder, a vanaprastha, or a sannyasi. However, at the same time, generally it is considered more likely that one could get bewildered as a householder. And therefore, to take precautions against that, originally the three upper castes have to become brahmacharis for some time and experience austerity and sense control and learn the Vedas and learn the goal of life is not materialism and enjoying, but rather to transcend the material world. So some education should be given to a person. And once he is educated properly and trained up with a sense of austerity and true knowledge, then he is qualified to become a householder. And when he becomes a householder with that knowledge, then he does not become overcome. Now, of course, here it says we are vimuda. We are very foolish and pramatta, mad. We become intoxicated with the enjoyments of household life and the goals of household life. And because of that, we've forgotten the real goal. And therefore, we didn't recognize Krishna. And we refused to give him any food. So that, of course, is a big disaster. They realize that they forgot the whole goal of life. And why? Because they were overcome with their household affairs. So, of course, these brahmanas also had training. Because they're brahmins, they knew the Vedas. So they also went through the training of being brahmachari, learning the Vedas, etc., graduating, then taking up household life. That's the general method. But even in spite of that, still, they became bewildered and they forgot everything. So the danger is there in any case. Now the safeguards are there, of course, or at least the precautionary measures are there. One should be qualified for a grihastha life by being a brahmachari first, and when one is a grihastha, then one should understand that at a certain age one should renounce household life and become a vanaprastha or a sannyasi. So one cannot become too attached if one has that in mind all the time throughout one's household life. That at least is the at least a safeguard. Nevertheless, we'll find, in spite of this whole varnashram system where everything is quite clearly defined in terms of varnas and ashramas, still people forget. Even within that system. Now, of course, in the Western world and other cultures, they don't have a system like that of renunciation, really, so they can't be blamed so much. But in India, they do have a varnashram system. But in spite of that, everybody forgets. And therefore, we'll find that the brahmachari ashram, in spite of the fact that it's supposed to be there, is almost non-existent and has been non-existent for many, many, many hundreds of years. In fact, the tradition among most people, except for the Brahmanas, the Vaishyas and Kshatriyas didn't have much of a Brahmachari education. And if we look in the modern world, then Brahmachari life consists of Brahmachari for 4 hours or something, and then they get their Brahmachari status and they get married the next hour or whatever. That's because they can minimize the expenses for calling the Brahmanas and doing the ceremonies. They can do everything at once. So first they become a Brahmachari, get the Rupanayana, and then they get married. And this way they save expenses of having two ceremonies and feeding more people. So this is Brahmachari life in the modern world in India. There is no Brahmachari life. So it's all Grihastha life. So that we could say very similar to the Western world now, because there's no training at all. But even if we look a few hundred years ago, similarly, the same sort of situation was there. This is not a modern phenomena, that this contracted Brahmachari life is there. Of course, there's a provision in the Vedas also that you can be a Brahmachari for, what, 1 day, 4 days, 1 year, or 20 years. So in other words, 1 day or 4 days is pretty nominal. And even 1 year is probably very nominal. So those provisions are given. Different types of brahmacharis are there. And generally the Vaishyas and Kshatriyas would go through that type of abbreviated brahmachari life. And the brahmanas supposedly would have the longer term of really studying the Vedas. Of course, that's not there in the modern world either. And nowadays, most of the brahmins don't do that, except in very traditional families who are worshipping the deities in big temples, and they will go through that. But otherwise, even the brahmanas don't become brahmacharis more than a few hours. So that precautionary measure even has disappeared. And of course we'll see even 500 years ago it was not common for the brahmanas who were qualified to take sannyas. If one took all the brahmanas, how many took sannyas 500 years ago? Not many. Sannyasis weren't so common after all even at that time. And of course in the modern world it is even rarer. So this whole idea of detaching oneself through household life, even in the Varnashram system, has become weakened over time. And what does it mean? People have become bewildered. And even though the system is there, they've forgotten the system because of the attachments of household life. So what to speak of where there is no Brahmachari life and there's no idea of renunciation later on, then that household life is a very big source of bewilderment for everyone. So what is the reason? The reason, of course, is attachment to material affairs, attachment to wife and children for the husband and for the wife, for the husband and children, and for the house and for the properties of the house, things that are in the house that you buy, and for the relatives surrounding you, for your vehicles, and such things. So all of this becomes a source of attachment, and attachment leads to bondage. Because if we have attachments, it is very rare we will give them up. Rather, we increase the attachments. Of course, the precautionary measure is to renounce everything. But people don't do that, so therefore the attachment remains till the end of life. And what happens? They're born again with more attachments. All the previous attachment, previous lifetime, plus this life's attachments. So this increases the bondage of the material world. So what is wrong with bondage? It produces ignorance of the spiritual goal. The more we become involved in attachment to material things, the more we become covered and we cannot realize that we actually are Atma. And our real position is to serve the Lord. That becomes covered up the more we have attachments. So therefore, in Bhagavatam, and of course in Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami mentions the same thing, that to qualify for bhakti, which is of course the goal of life, in order to get that realization, you need to be qualified. And what is the qualification? You cannot be too attached to things in the material world. If you're overcome by material attachments, you're covered with ignorance, and therefore it's highly unlikely that you will have any develop any faith in the Supreme Lord. So that the ignorance acts as a big obstacle. Of course, there are exceptions, and by the exceptional mercy of a great devotee or the Supreme Lord, even one who is covered by ignorance can suddenly manifest faith and then perform devotional service, but that is rare. So normally, if we're covered by ignorance, it is very unlikely that we develop faith and perform bhakti. So ignorance and material attachment, therefore, is a detriment for the development of bhakti. So household life, therefore, produces a lot of that ignorance. One is subject to that ignorance because of the situation of having close association with wife and children, husband, etc., relatives, and out of necessity, therefore, having a house and properties and other things, which breeds all sorts of attachments. So this breeds the ignorance, and therefore, less likely we can develop spiritually. So in this case, we see that the brahmanas, of course, this was 5,000 years ago. Even then, the brahmanas, though they were educated properly, and they were brahmacharis, and they graduated, then they became grihasthas, and then they got married according to all the rites, etc., and everything was done quite properly. Still, they forgot also, even at that time. The world is very, very bewildering in spite of all the precautions of Varnashram system, etc. Still, one can become very bewildered. Yeah? So that is the position of these brahmanas. What to speak of other people in this material world who have no status as anything in the Varnashram system at all, or even if they are in the Varnashram system, not practicing properly. So the lesson to learn is that it is very easy to become bewildered in this material world and develop all these attachments and therefore forget the ultimate goal in life. So the Supreme Lord gave them a chance. He's very merciful, so he gave them a chance and he sent the cowherd boys to the brahmanas to ask them for food. You please give Krishna and Balaram food because they are hungry. But the brahmanas, because of ignorance, they could not recognize the Supreme Lord Krishna. Of course, that would mean that they recognize this little boy as God, which is also difficult for most people. Everyone outside of Vrindavan especially, this becomes difficult. And at the same time, even if they don't recognize him as God, if they have spontaneous attraction to him, then that would be acceptable also. So that was the position of their wives. They were simply attracted to Krishna. Doesn't matter who he is so wonderful and so beautiful, we must serve him. So that type of attraction was also not there in the brahmanas. They were hard-hearted, so to speak. We can say they're unfortunate in one sense, because the wives had one advantage, and that is they associated with the flower sellers and others who had seen Krishna directly beforehand, and they had told these women, oh, Krishna is very, very beautiful and very sweet. He's the most wonderful person in the world. But the husbands didn't know about this. So when the cowherd boys announced Krishna and Balaram are here and they're hungry, then they were completely unprepared and they had no idea. So they are very, very unfortunate. So they blame, of course, their household position of being overcome by household duties, etc. Another problem, of course, is that generally this what the brahmanas were doing is associated with what we call karma kanda, or the ritualistic aspect of the Vedas. And the rituals are there in order to ensure one's material stability in this world and prosperity and svargaloka in the next life. So in other words, it's not directly spiritual. We can live happily in this world if we simply perform the sacrifices. This is the type of attitude of a karmakandi. So the brahmanas have a tendency, many of them will have this tendency to get involved in this type of activity. The other brahmana, another type of brahmana, will get engaged in jnana. Because jnana is a the qualification for jnana is sattva-gun, and the Brahman should be sattva-gun. So they should become detached from everything, and then they'll begin to study the Vedanta and things like this, and try to merge into the Brahman. So this is another type of Brahmana. But in this case, we see they were not involved in that. They were simply involved in doing sacrifices and doing all that perfectly. And they were interested in prosperity in this material world and elevation in the next to Svargaloka or whatnot. So that's another problem of being involved in the Vedas, that one can get involved in the wrong section of the Vedas and end up not appreciating the Lord. So as I mentioned yesterday, the Vedas give all these different processes which become bewildering because people become attached to these different processes. But the ultimate conclusion is that one should not become attached to these processes which are partial, that is to the karma or the jnana or to the yoga. We should realize they are temporary things, and when we've got the results, then we should give them up and go to the next stage. They are temporary, they are not eternal processes. Karma, yoga, basically rajugun. And when one becomes purified by nishkama karma, then one becomes sattvic. When one becomes sattvic, then one performs jnana. And if one perfects jnana completely, and one is about to transcend the gunas, one gives up that also. And then either performs bhakti or merges into the Brahman. One of the two things. So all of these are temporary processes. Except bhakti, devotion to the Lord. That one remains from beginning to end. And once one has established that relationship with Krishna, then that becomes something eternal that is never given up. So we do sadhana bhakti now, and after we achieve the effects of sadhana bhakti, then we have bhav bhakti, and after bhav bhakti is finished, then we have prem bhakti. And we don't give up bhakti at all. Bhakti remains, it simply transforms and becomes more pure, that's all. So this is the nature of bhakti. And even in the higher stages, Rupa Goswami explains that bhava becomes prema, but that doesn't mean that bhava is temporary, because bhava is spiritual, a purely spiritual process, so therefore it cannot be temporary also. So even if you attain prema, doesn't mean you give up bhava, it continues. And in prema, if you get prema, then you can go forward and go higher than that and get sneha and raga and man and anuraga and mahabhava, if you're a very exalted devotee in higher rasas. And in spite of retaining the highest state, still you do not give up bhava and prema and the other things. All things are there eternal. All the different stages of love of the Supreme Lord remain, and they're all eternal, and they manifest at different times in the pastimes of the devotee with Krishna. So bhakti is eternal, and all of these other religious processes recommended in different places of the Vedic literatures by the Supreme Lord are temporary. So if one becomes attached to these temporary aspects without realizing the final goal, then the whole thing is useless. So karma yoga, even nishkama karma yoga performed without recognition of the Lord becomes useless. And the same with jnana. Without recognition of the Lord, it is also useless. And one cannot attain liberation if one does not recognize the Lord. One cannot attain even material results if one does not recognize the Lord in karma. So ultimately everything else, all these other processes are depending upon recognition and worship of the Supreme Lord. And when recognition of the Supreme Lord and worship of the Supreme Lord becomes most prominent, then we call it bhakti yoga, to distinguish it from the other processes where other things are prominent. But nevertheless, bhakti is the sustaining factor in all these different processes. And it is eternal. Krishna and Balaram, they wanted to give mercy. They like to give mercy to everyone and give opportunity to everyone. So the wives of the brahmanas, they were very fortunate. Because immediately they heard about Krishna and Balaram, they offered everything to them with no obstacles, whereas the husbands could not do that. And rather the opposite, they opposed. We cannot give anything to them. So they were in a very unfortunate position. That's why they said we are covered by ignorance. We are completely intoxicated with household affairs. So sometimes this will act as an obstacle. So one has to be very, very careful as a householder too, not become overcome and miss the whole goal of life because of one's preoccupation with one's household duties, so to speak. So Krishna and Balaram came, and what happened? They were begging for food. So this, of course, is a rather peculiar thing for the Lord to do, because the Lord, as it says here, the Lord is already self-satisfied. He is Atmaram. He's the ultimate Atmaram, satisfied with himself, and he doesn't need anything from anybody. What to speak of material things, even spiritually, he's complete. He's Purnam. Yet, of course, we see that Krishna, though he is Purna, he is also dependent on his devotee. This looks like a big contradiction, but actually it's very wonderful. He is actually dependent upon his devotees, and he serves his devotees. And this is the, let's say, the highest quality, the most unique quality of the Supreme Lord, that he becomes attracted to the devotees and surrenders to them, even though he is Supreme Lord. Out of his great mercy and his love, he does that. So, the Lord is independent, but here we see he is begging for food. Now, of course, the Brahmanas would not expect that if they have ignorance of the real nature of the Lord. They would never expect the Lord to be begging from anybody. They would not have that type of realization. So the Lord fooled them in one sense. And he appeared directly before them, asking for things, of course, through the cowherd voice, but in a way that was a little tricky, because the Lord was begging, and normally the Lord doesn't beg because he's self-sufficient. So because of this opportunity, which is, we can say, is a little bit disguised, they lost the opportunity of serving the Lord. They couldn't recognize the Lord at all. And therefore, they're considered very, very unfortunate. So though the Lord begs like this, we should not think it is ordinary begging also. If a normal beggar is someone who is dependent on another person for his livelihood. But the Lord is self-sufficient. So if he begs, it is for another purpose. And of course we can remember the example of Krishna being hungry and therefore wanting some milk from Mother Yasoda. So how can the Lord be hungry like that also and want milk? So the answer is that it is not actually the milk that Krishna wants. What is it? It is the response of love. So he appreciates the prema of Mother Yasoda. In other words, he's drinking the prema and relishing the prema of Mother Yasoda in the form of her milk. And this is what controls the Lord. And it controls the Lord so much that he is willing to become bound up by Mother Yasoda also. In spite of the fact that the yogis cannot even touch the Lord, must grab him and tie him up. Mother Yasoda is able to grab him and tie him up. So, in other words, Krishna is conquered by his devotee because of the bhakti or the prema in the devotee. So when Krishna asks for food from the brahmanas, and he gets from the brahmanas' wives, and this is the expression of their devotion. They are willing to offer completely everything to Krishna. So it's not actually so much the food, it's the sentiment. And as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you offer me a leaf, a fruit, a flower. Doesn't have to be anything elaborate, but bhakti bharatam, filled with devotion, with actual love. Then I accept it. And of course, not only the Lord accepts it, but he's very, very pleased with that. So, of course, we can also learn from that to understand that what the Lord wants most from us is not so much the offering as the expression of genuine love, which should be anyabhilashita shunya, devoid of all material desires. Simply an expression of one's love of the Lord. And that's exactly what the wives of the Brahmanas did. Simply offered to the Lord out of great love for him, spontaneous love. And the Lord was very, very pleased with that. So the when the opportunity was given to them, they responded. Brahmanas' wives responded very, very spontaneously. And the husbands didn't. They couldn't respond at all except to refuse. So there we see the difference. The wives were very fortunate of having achieved a very high standard of bhakti, and the husbands had not. So they have rightly recognized their position here, that they are, yes, they are ignorant. They are bewildered about their own true goal in life. They don't know what it is. They are bewildered by their household affairs and their attachment to things that. So our lesson to learn from this is that we should beware of the nature of the material world and the nature of our relationships in this material world. Not necessarily even a householder at any ashram will have its attachments also. But of course the household life has, they say, more facilities for falling into maya, becoming attached. In spite of the fact that one has precautions like brahmachari life and sannyas later, etc., and there's rules in household life also, still one can become bewildered like these brahmanas. And the other point to remember is that by simply making an offering with devotion, the Lord becomes very, very pleased with that. A spontaneous love of the Lord is very attractive to Krishna. So in this way, the wives of the Brahmanas are highly praised, in spite of the fact that they disobeyed their husbands. Okay. Question?
If we make an offering of devotion to Lord Chaitanya as compared to Lord Krishna, is there a different mood that we offer?
In general, no, because any form of God, we say, of course, anukulina Krishna nusilanam is uttama bhakti. That means cultivating your relationship with Krishna with favorable attitude. But Krishna, and the meaning of Krishna is not just Krishna, but Krishna and all bona fide expansions or forms of the Lord, like avatar forms, etc. So therefore, it's all considered bhakti and uttama bhakti if it is done anya abhilashya shunya. So whatever, in general, we can say like that. Now, of course, the mood with each particular form is slightly different. For instance, if we are a devotee of Narsimhadev, it is also bhakti. But for a devotee of Narsimhadev, obviously the taste of that relationship is different from the taste with Krishna or Vishnu or whatever. We have different mixtures of rasa there, so the taste will be slightly different. In the case of Lord Chaitanya and Krishna, it is very, very similar. In fact, of all the different forms of God, the form of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are probably the most similar. The only difference is that Krishna is called sweet, and his relationships and everything is called sweet or madhurya. And everything concerning Lord Chaitanya is called audarja, which means very munificent or generous, in the sense that Lord Chaitanya likes to save everybody. He's delivering all those people in the material world, etc. And of course he's acting as a human being and trying to help everybody in the material world. So that his special quality is this very merciful nature of delivering everybody. So that even though he's very much like Krishna, that is the little difference there.
Is permanent.
So I'm just a bit confused. Okay, yeah. It is true, if one goes up to one is sadhana bhakti and then bhava bhakti, In Bhav Bhakti, one can see the Supreme Lord. It's a very, very special status. And yes, it is considered eternal because the Shaktis of the Lord, Samvit and Phladin Shakti, enter into the Jiva at that point. But there are cases that in which that Bhav Bhakta may apparently fall from his position. And such a case is Bharat Maharaj or Bilwa Mangal Thakur. They fell from their position. But we'll see that actually, though they fell from their position, they regained the status very quickly. And they progress further onwards also. So at that stage, the Supreme Lord personally takes care of them. And because they've attained that state, they can never lose that taste really. And therefore they attain that state again and they progress further. So we can say it's covered over temporarily by certain activities or whatever. Krishna says, Neha Vikramana Sasi Pratyavayana Vidyate, that nothing is lost. This is the general proposition, unlike other processes where you lose everything in jnana. You're not guaranteed to progress in jnana. If you do some mistake, you can fall down and that's it, finished, and you have to start all over from zero, or yoga the same, you can fall down, and karma. But bhakti, no. Generally, one can progress life after life and where one left off and get higher and higher and higher for many lifetimes. That's the general thing. The exception to that is if one commits aparad, particularly Vaishnava aparad, then the bhakti can weaken and decline or get destroyed. So Lord Chaitanya calls this the mad elephant offense. A mad elephant stomps out the bhakti creeper, finished off. So that can happen through serious Vaishnava aparad, that one can have one's bhakti destroyed. So that is the exception to this idea of Niha Vikramadasa Pratyavaya Vidyate. But in general, if we don't do that, then we can keep progressing onwards and go onwards. It can develop and develop and develop. Yeah, but the Lord made arrangements for him that he never forgot the Lord, in any case, even as a deer. And in the next lifetime, therefore, he became even stronger. So it was actually an advantage for him that he improved his status after becoming a deer. He improved his status with becoming Jadvarat after that, over before what he was. And so he actually got advantage from that. So in any case, the Lord makes arrangements for such devotees. And Rupa Goswami, one should never criticize the Bhav Bhakta even if he has apparent fault. Because he's on the high status and he's under the protection of the Lord. So we should not consider those real faults in one sense.
People who are running after sense gratification, like intoxication, partying or enjoyment, they're also running after happiness ultimately. So, why they are called bewildered? They're also in the creation.
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody wants happiness, definitely. And that, of course, is the nature of the jiva, to be happy. But the only difficulty in getting happiness in this world is it is self-centered and it depends upon material things. And therefore it becomes impossible. Because the Atma cannot be happy with material things because they're all temporary and they're completely different from the Atma. We know the story of the fish out of water. You know the story? The fish enjoys in the water, you take him out of the water and you give him all sorts of nice things to eat and he simply cannot enjoy those things. So the Atma in this material world is like a fish out of water. It's trying to enjoy all these different things, but it's completely different from the Atma. It's not natural to the Atma, because Atma is spiritual and this thing is all dead, material stuff, even your body. But we're trying to enjoy with the body material objects, so it becomes impossible because everything is temporary and very much unlike the soul. So why do we do it? This is the ignorance. We have complete identification with our body, and we have the complete conviction that somehow I can get some happiness here in spite of all the obstacles. And in spite of seeing that everybody else dies and everything is temporary, still we refuse to accept the fact and we still try to enjoy it. That's called ignorance. We don't learn from that experience. And not just once, but millions and millions of lifetimes we go through and we observe the same facts again and again, and still we don't accept it. Why? Because of that stubborn desire to enjoy in this particular way. My enjoyment. I want my enjoyment. So the soul, by nature, I've said, has this propensity for enjoyment. And cannot give it up also. So the only solution is, if the enjoying capacity is to change the center of enjoyment. That's all. So bhakti means that we change kama, which means enjoyment for myself, into give enjoyment to Krishna. So we become attached to giving to Krishna, to giving enjoyment to the Supreme Lord. And in the process, then we become happy. So what giving to Krishna without any motivation means love. That is called prema. And in the material world, our desire for enjoyment is self-centered. I want some enjoyment for myself through different people or different objects or whatever. And this becomes a cause of bondage. So Lord Chaitanya says one has to convert or transform kama into prema. That is very difficult to do because they're opposite in one sense. But the one common factor is the jiva and its propensity for bliss. So we just have to give the jiva a different way of getting that bliss. And that change, of course, is very radical. One has to take oneself out of the center and put the Supreme Lord in the center.
There seems to be that fear of moving on sometimes, because it's like we're pushing in the center instead of us.
Yeah, you lose everything.
Yeah.
So that is why faith is like the first little step. We got a little bit of trust that if we give it to Krishna, we're not going to lose everything. That is what the little faith is. And with that, then we become a little more curious about things, and we start inquiring, and then we get chastric evidence and all this knowledge. And we perform bhakti, and then that trust in the Lord, that we don't lose everything, but rather we gain by the whole process of sacrificing and surrender, we get more. That trust increases. And when one reaches prema, then it's everything for the Lord and nothing for myself, with complete trust in the Lord. That is what prema is. And if you go higher than that, if you get to raga, then raga means one will sacrifice even oneself for the Lord. Anything for the Lord. Even give up one's life, doesn't matter. So there's complete trust in the Lord when one gets higher and higher and higher. And in the beginning, a little bit with Shraddha. And if not nothing, then no bhakti. We won't commit ourselves to anything. There's no faith. Okay. Anyway.